Good morning and welcome to the roundtable for this Monday, the 2nd of December. I'm Joe Donahue. In this hour, we'll start off with our roundtable panel featuring Alan Chartok, Libby Post, and Rosemary Armeo. Later in the program on this Cyber Monday, we'll discuss Giving Tuesday. Kat Warren will tell us what the dog knows. Michael Zeigan will, Tony Fletcher will talk with Ian Pickus about his new memoir, Boy About Town, plus Alan will be in the Congressional Corner. The roundtable begins after news from the BBC and WAMC Regional News. Good morning and welcome to the roundtable for this Monday. We have lights, on-air lights all over the studio.
I stopped in time, didn't I?
Yeah, yes, you did.
Okay.
Yes, you did.
Nobody knew who you were talking about. It's fine. Except us, and we won't say anything.
Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Monday. I hope and trust everyone had a lovely holiday weekend. It was very nice. We missed you all while we were away for a couple of days, but it was nice to be away from
you. We had roundtable discussions with the family around the leftovers, and I have to say they were louder and ruder than what we do here.
Yes, we try to have some decorum, certainly, but that means you're in good practice for today, and there's certainly nothing wrong with that. Let me introduce our panelists this morning. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. I've seen him. I'm sure he'll be here momentarily. I know he's in the building, so I'm sure he'll find his way to Studio A in just a moment. Political consultant Libby Post is here, and University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo is with us as well. And we welcome you all to the program and to the conversation. You can join us simply by going to roundtable at WAMC.org. And we'd love to hear what is on your mind on this Monday morning. Normally, we think of these as, very quiet days. But
after the holidays, you
yeah,
mean?
Or before and after, yes. But mm-hmm. A lot going on, so we'll talk about it. Let's begin with an old chestnut,
and somebody's roasting it by the fire. Yeah, I'm sure. Right.
So, from what I understand, and we've talked about it many times in this program, the president said, "Well, look, we're fixing the healthcare website." And we're going to give ourselves a deadline, and that deadline was this past weekend. And by that time, we believe we will have it up and running. And and now it seems to be two things. One is that the administration has said, "Well, we've pretty much done what we said we were going to do. We've improved it. We've definitely made it a lot better." Now, anything wrong with it, of course, is pointing to it and saying, "Well, you didn't do what you said you were going to do." And add to that another layer, which is the insurance companies, which are complaining and saying that it's not working for them. And you have, a good mess that we can talk about on this Monday morning.
Right. Well, all those of us who work in offices know that IT people have their own time frame. And so when they say it'll be working by such and such date, you know that is a lie. And indeed, that's exactly what happened here. We have a PR attempt to say, "Oh, see, it's much better. It's fixed." But it isn't fixed until it works all the way, and that is not happening.
And I mean, I think that's a hard thing to, maybe not, maybe you can disagree with me on this, but it's a hard thing to define, isn't it, of
what's working?
What's fixed, right? What is?
100,000 people have signed up on this site in the last couple of weeks, and since they've been making the changes. And honestly, the insurance companies, their criticism of this, they weren't going to be happy no matter what happened. So I don't really, I take what they have to say with a grain of salt. I'd like to see this thing fixed totally so that the issue just goes away and people can start Correct. Signing up and doing what they're doing. But again, I will make this point until the day I die.
Which I hope is long, long from now.
If the states had done what they were supposed to do by setting up their own insurance exchanges, we wouldn't be in this mess. But when you look at the states that didn't do it, they're mostly Republican governors. And I can only imagine the phone calls that went on saying, let's not do this. Because they knew.
Let's just see what
let's
happens,
see what
maybe.
Happens. They knew that they if they didn't do it, more pressure would be put on the federal site. And the federal site wasn't didn't they didn't think when they started this that they were going to have that that amount of people using it. New York is working.
But as I allow more steam to come out of Rosemary's ears, let me just ask this question, which is but if this is your centerpiece legislation for your administration, shouldn't you make sure what Republican governors be damned that you can get this done whether you
yes,
need to or not?
I agree with you. Yes, it should have been done. But the fact of the matter is it wasn't. And that's the reality of the situation. So now the reality of the situation is that it's working pretty well. And it'll continue. And I'm not trying to make excuses here. I'm just trying to give people a little bit of perspective. You know, it's like this. It was okay to wait 4 days in line for Black Friday and then have people kill each other and stampede each other. But it's not okay to wait, an extra 5 minutes
online.
Who says
that's okay? That wasn't okay.
Well,
either.
I mean, you know, it's not okay, but people do it.
I don't know. You damn liberals are forcing me into, once again, being in a position where I am. But you are so extreme that you forgive everything just because it's a liberal president who did it.
No.
This was a muck up. It continues to be that. It's no surprise that the Republican governors were going to try to sabotage this. It was no surprise that things were not going well. It was not managed well. That is a management problem. It continues to be, and there's no punishment for it. We just are in this morass.
Punishment? Let me punishment. Now you're
you've done it.
Now you've done it. I happen to agree from a political point of view with both of you. I happen to think that because I love all my children, but I think that this was a muck up. It was, and we all know that. But I also think that the American people know that they've mucked up in the past. And if, in fact, it is true that it's better, 90% better or 80%, however they judge that, I think people are going to say, that's good. That's nice. I think when he lets small business off for a year, what he's created is an impression that he had to back off. And that's an apology.
And an impression that the Republicans who called for a delay were right.
My friend John Blydenberg used to say to me when we taught at Rutgers together, he used to say to me, never admit. Because they can think you're wrong. They can think they think you're wrong. They can think they think they think you're wrong. But
right.
Unless you tell them you were wrong,
wrong.
You know, you weren't really wrong. And because I think as we emerge out of this mess, people are going to forget it.
That's
as
right.
long as it works.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this is a blip, you know, like some other blips that people have had along the way. And the voters, you know, the people who need this will get it, and it'll be a far distant memory.
A day is a long time
That's
in
right.
politics.
That's right. It'll be a distant memory in next summer. In the summer
I'm sounding like a Republican again. I apologize, but I am sick of Obama's blips. And you cannot go on blaming Republicans if a Democratic president cannot get the major points
act
of his
together.
Policies across.
His act together.
I didn't know where she was going.
A-word,
I was just gonna help.
Not the S word.
Yeah.
Right. I've lost the train of this whole conversation. That's okay.
No, no.
Well, that goes with the train.
Train wreck next
time. Oh, boy.
So let me ask you, at what point, a blip, fine, but, you know, there are those on the Republican side who are equating this to, you know, the largest screw-up in government history.
Well, that's what they have to do. I mean,
right.
That's part of their partisan act.
But I would think that WMDs was the biggest screw-up in government history.
But...
And nobody, and half the people who are listening right now will have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah, no, but that's the point.
Right.
That's exactly your point.
Right.
It's gone now.
But my question is that, you know, there's a long-term forgetting and the short-term forgetting. And how, if it's constantly mentioned, and while we're at it, let's go with Rosemary's point that it continues to be... I mean, if the blip had been fixed a month ago, then we could probably say it. But the blip keeps blipping. So at what point does that stop?
And we're about to come up to new budget problems, a new debt ceiling.
Right.
So, this is one in a series of what you call blips, and I think are mismanagement.
You know, here comes, I don't know if it's on your list or not, Joe, but here comes Chris Christie. What is it that people like about him so much? They like that he knows how to cooperate. He's the head of the National Governors Association, but that he could come over after Sandy and put his arm around Clinton Obama,
right.
Yeah, and then make peace with Cuomo. And a lot of people are saying one of the more outspoken guys for one of the worst tabloids in the world this morning said that this was a major mistake on Christie's part. But you see, I think that Joe bringing up this discussion this morning about getting together, people see this partisanship. They don't like it.
Nope.
They don't like the fact that the Republicans manufacture crises where they could be helping every single time. And I think that's something that people are smart enough to get. They get
it. Once again, you're saying Republicans manufacture. Democrats have done and continue to do the same thing. It was Obama who promised an end to this sort of partisanship, and it never, ever happened.
Two wrongs never make a right.
You're right,
He tried very hard to do that in the beginning,
Alan,
and got nothing
back. I think the evidence is against you. This is a man who does not have the congressional leaders over. He does not socialize. He does not talk to them. He comes and directs them and lectures them as to what he wants. He is not effective as a manager, much less as someone who can stop partisanship.
Well, I'm not going to totally disagree with you, but I'm not going to apologize either. No, because I would never do that.
Because that means you're wrong, and you never, never, never want to admit you're wrong.
That's the right. entire point here.
Right.
No, I don't think he's finessed this the way that he should. But I do think he really had hoped in the beginning to make peace with them. And they were buying none of it. They didn't want him to be president. They didn't want the first black president, I don't think.
Right. But he never accepted the idea that his style might have anything to do with it, that if you're Mitch McConnell, you don't want this uppity black man, to use your complaint here, sitting in the White House saying, Mitch, this is what you have to do, and here's all the essential reasons why.
Tough.
He never did it the right way.
Well, what is the way? Wait a second.
What
is the right way?
He was Mr. Conciliatory.
Yeah, he
has always been.
And what is the
he's
right
always
way?
Been the kind of person who wanted to bring people into the room and hash it out and get
Where's
it done.
Where's the evidence of that? What compromise has he gotten that we that,
oh,
that
oh, well,
points to it?
You mean to say what compromise has he
the
gotten?
The stimulus plan. There's all kinds of things that have happened.
And he's had guts and he stood up to
the stimulus plan, which was a Bush plan that he continued.
They didn't want him.
Even that he handled.
They didn't want him to be president.
Right.
They didn't want him to be president.
Of course he didn't.
And unlike
you accept
others,
that coming in.
No, you don't. No, you don't.
Right.
I mean, Bush was the president, and he got a certain amount of cooperation. Certainly, Tip O'Neill gave a lot of cooperation to Reagan. They worked well, extremely well together. These guys decided, especially with the Tea Party movement and everything, mm-hmm. we do not want to give an inch.
Well, this is why we continue to have gridlock. It's because each side blames the other wholly, and that just is not the case. And go back to the stimulus, Libby. When that came out, the very first package passed by the Democrats was filled with pork. It was disgusting. And there was Obama, who had the entire country behind him. All he had to do was veto that bill, piss off his own Democrats, and say, do this right, do this for the country. He would have won Republicans. He could have done it from the very beginning.
Oh, I don't like
stun
the
them into silence.
which word?
The P word.
Oh. Which is what?
He annoyed them.
Something off.
Ticked off.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I know you edited me once when I said that in a commentary.
Okay, so if you're not going to argue the fact, you argue the language. That's right. Good.
Well, no, Whoa. Look, it's like that. It's
you're the offender.
Look, I get what you're saying, but I also recognize that they don't want a black man telling them what to do, and that is the bottom line. I think he could
and
have
she
come,
said so.
I think he could have come and vetoed the stimulus bill, and they would have attacked him. He could have not vetoed it. They would have attacked him. It doesn't really matter what he does.
I think Obama's been a black man for a long time. And if he's risen to the level of president, he should have figured out a way to get what he wants despite that.
You mean give it all up?
That's easy to say.
Yeah. You did try giving
really
it all
easy,
up.
Easy to say, Rosemary. When it's you're dealing with institutional, systemic racism that's being reaffirmed and bolstered by everything that's going on in America today, and it's just so easy, you know, all the hatred, all the vile, you know, it's all coming down to you can look at it. There's been such a change.
But how do you parse that in the sense of because I don't think anyone in this room. Will disagree with what you are saying that it is right. That it is a systemic problem that it is something that is there, but how do you then say okay, if this regardless of the race or sex of this president, what are we going to at what point does it not become politics? Because there's plenty of white men who have gone through very similar political turmoils over stupid things. But my question is, at what point does it not become can you say, okay, well, it is because of this and it's because of that, and still go on and move forward no matter who the president is?
No, see, what I really took exception to with Rosemary's point is that, you know, he's been black for a long time. He knows how to deal with people. No, he is Harvard educated. He is a brilliant man. And he doesn't have to shuffle for anybody. And he doesn't have to, you know, create this sort of, you know, this persona, which is since I am, I know how to operate with you crackers, if that's what the right word is in this case. I just don't agree with this. And he has beaten them. He beat them back on all of these confrontations before the Congress by doing his thing and doing it well. Do I think he messed up on the Obamacare? I do. I really think it was a mess. And that as the president, he should have taken no prisoners. Somebody should be out of there by now. Mm-hmm. People should have the idea that, you know, that this was a mess up and I hold my people accountable.
Okay, that's cool.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll continue this conversation, then go to news break. Right after this short break, we welcome your comments roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support comes from Haydenville Woodworking and Design, South Deerfield, Massachusetts. Over 20 years offering construction and millwork services, installing their cabinets throughout New England, and shipping their furniture nationwide. HaydenvilleWD.com. East Heaven Hot Tubs and Paradise Spa, Northampton, Massachusetts, offering private hot tub room rentals with indoor or outdoor rooftop tubs. Massage for couples and individuals. East Heaven for reservations. Curtis Lumber, providing kitchens, baths, doors, and windows, paint, flooring, and more since 1890. With 21 locations in New York and northern Vermont, CurtisLumber.com. And the Honest Weight Food Co-op, open at their new location, 100 Waterfleet Avenue, Albany. Offering local and organic produce, groceries, and more, HonestWeight.coop.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Rosemary Armeo is here, Libby Post, and Alan Chartok. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We got this letter from Eric who says, this was the biggest screw-up in government history, not WAMD, because Bush was going to find an excuse for war anyway. It was the total lack of planning for what happened after mission accomplished.
Good point.
It was a terrible lie that got us into a war mm-hmm. and got a lot of kids killed.
But she's saying he would have found some other excuse.
So what? Right. I mean, the point of the matter is you hold him accountable for lying, basically. And that's
this is a bad day. We're even arguing over the letters.
No, I think Eric is saying that it was the biggest screw up in government history.
He is saying.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
That the mission accomplished.
Yes. Right. Well, yes. I heard it.
Okay.
Right,
so
whatever.
keep writing, Eric.
Did you want to make another point? Because okay, you're done.
I think I want to be quiet now.
By the way, they make those bracelets that you're putting in your mouth with lead in them.
No, they don't do that anymore.
Well, they used to, and maybe it's an old one.
It's just.
Okay.
When you look at the well, before we move on, and we're going to go to a news break in just a half second here, but when you think of obviously we'll be talking much more about this issue, but I want to go back to something Rosemary said is next we're going to get into these budget issues, but we sort of have to put this one to rest first, don't we?
I don't see that happening. I don't think everything's going to be fixed, and it will continue to. It will definitely affect the next round of negotiation when we come to budgets and debt ceiling.
Well, are they lying? Is the question. In other words, is
too
it
too lying?
The Obama people. In other words, is it really 90% fixed? If it's 90% fixed, that's pretty good.
90%. That means they know everything that's wrong with it. They don't, or they'd have it all fixed. How can they say? I think 90% is made up.
I think you underestimate the complexity of a site like this.
Oh no! I didn't know. I didn't underestimate it, Libby. The Obama administration
they did, but now they're fixing it, and I think you very can late. Say, okay, fine. But I think you can say something's 90% fixed and you can get through to the last 10%. That's what all the testing should have been beforehand. I get that. They screwed up. There's no two ways about it. Okay? But I don't think we can just say, oh, it's BS. They're saying it's 90% fixed. It always has to be 100%. Any site, my site, which is a simple site, any site, the TU site, the New York Times site, they all have problems, and they all
the
have
WMC
bugs.
Type,
right? So type. Okay, and you work them out.
But
we got to go to
run out of time.
Okay,
but we'll be back.
So be
we
quiet.
Have a whole other half hour. We're great. We're going to go to an NPR news break. We welcome your comments in the meantime. WAMC.org, roundtable WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to WAMC and our roundtable panel this morning. Rosemary Armello is here. Libby Post joins us and Alan Chartok. We welcome your comments as always. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We've been talking about healthcare for the first part of our program. We're now going to move on to a series of other topics, beginning with the story making headlines, really, certainly in this region and around the nation, and that is the train derailment in New York City. Federal investigators are in New York to determine why a Manhattan-bound Metro-North passenger train spun out of control early Sunday in the Bronx, killing four people and propelling dozens of passengers out of their seats as Thanksgiving crowds headed home on one of the busiest travel days of the year. A full team of investigators from the NTSB, National Transportation Safety Board, arrived from Washington on the scene at 12:30 to find seven cars in the locomotive derailed. The NTSB representative Earl Wiener says that in an evening news conference near the crash site along the Harlem River and just north of the station, while helicopters circled above, at least 63 people were injured, 11 of them listed in critical condition. The crash is thought to be the deadliest train wreck in New York City since 1991, when five people were killed and more than 150 were injured. And certainly the images from that site are quite grim and disturbing.
So let me just get something straight. Is 11 critical mean that they're likely to die?
They could die, yes.
Yeah. Well, yes, they're in critical condition, and they certainly can be upgraded.
Injuries,
and sometimes it means that there are it can mean that there is limbs that are missing, or that critical in nature. Well, so not to determine that the death toll could go higher, but that those injuries are indeed critical injuries. So. Mm-hmm. So this has brought a lot of spotlight onto that particular site of previous accidents, work that needed to be done at that site. It brings on another whole debate that I've seen over the past 24 hours, which is about seatbelts on trains. We're not allowed to get up to go to the bathroom on a plane without taking our seatbelt off. What about a train? And which don't even have seatbelts, interestingly enough. So
neither do school buses.
Right. Although some do. Some do, actually.
Yeah,
I thought they had to now.
Yeah, I think some school buses, I think it depends on the state and depends on the district, but I believe most do. But what were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say that this story, once again, is a repetition of other stories we've seen about critical infrastructure failures. That curve has been a problem. It's known to be a problem. They have not spent a lot of money on maintenance or rail maintenance on this particular company. And just like terrible weather, we seem to have story after story along the same lines. We need to spend more money and put more people at work in this area. So,
Libby, what were you going to say?
Well, no, it's just that, you know, first of all, you know, I think we all extend our condolences to the families and hope that the folks that are, you know, still in the hospital get out. Part of it is that infrastructure isn't sexy enough for people. And, you know, you only see a big push on infrastructure when something like this happens. I remember when the Schoharie Bridge went.
Yeah.
My father called.
But you haven't seen a whole lot of other bridges fixed since then, Libby.
I know.
So you have a brief time. Everyone says, oh, we're so
sorry. We got to do it. And then nothing happens. I mean, my father called me. You know, it must have been 80, the early 80s, and he was frantic because I was driving all around the state then. And we fixed the bridge, but there are so many other bridges that need to be fixed. And so now we have this $1 billion Tappan Zee, which is a sexy thing, but we're not fixing the roads and the bridges that people go on every single day that need to be fixed. And
well,
it's not sexy enough.
Let me just say that I come over from Great Barrington into Albany, and they do fix some roads. I mean, you know, the Freeview 90 from 90 to Albany has been under constant, you know, reconstruction, bridges being done and stuff. So I don't want somebody from the DOT calling us up and saying, you know, that it's wrong that nothing's being done.
But
I do agree with you that you know, we really have to raise some taxes.
Right.
You know, and people have to pay their taxes in order to make this happen.
That's right. And this is what tax money goes for. And that's what it is to live in a civil society. And, you know, the sequester, you know, if we connect the dots back to things, you got the sequester, you have all the budget cuts, you have the austerity budgets, you know, everything gets, you connect all these dots back and then you see, and then you have tragedy. And it's got to stop. I mean, it's insane. And we need to get out of this sense of taxes are bad. Taxes save lives. Taxes make our government work, and it repairs the roads, and it makes sure the bridges are still there and that the train lines get fixed. And that's what this is about. We have to stop. We just have to stop.
Well, the other thing is that I've always believed, taught my students, that all you have is one screw up and you got a new law. So the real question here is, was this operator error? Because if it was...
Well, speed is certainly being...
That's very different.
Also, the conductor's complaint that there was something wrong with the brakes.
Right.
So both of those things are being looked at. We don't know.
And they have the data. Yeah. They have the data box. Yeah. And so I'm sure a lot of this will be... although, again, there were other problems at this particular spot in the past. There were some questions. So I think it's sort of all of a stew, isn't it, of different things. And you look at it and try to make the
best. They have to sort
that out. I like Libby's little speech, your little sermon on taxes. I think that's really smart. I would just add that some sort of, you know, and this is easier to talk about than to do, a sweeping look at how we spend our money would make differences. We're putting money, we have a lot of money with the taxes already collected. Where is that money going? Mm-hmm. And it isn't into things like our interstate highway system, which is amazing, and bridges and all that. It's not going into that. It's not going into schools either.
No, it's going into Halliburton. It's going into places
where it
shouldn't
fixed.
Be. Yeah,
I
agree. I mean, you know.
Do a sermon on that.
Okay. And we need, a sermon, that's for somebody else to do. But, you know, we need to take a 360 look on how we allocate our resources in the state, from the state perspective, from the federal perspective, and get back to serving the people rather than the 1%.
Right.
You know, I love to look at the real estate section in the New York Times every week, and then I look at a little house in Long Island. See what they're paying in taxes in Westchester. You know, we're talking, and Cuomo knows it. That's why he's so gung-ho on this, because he's absolutely knows that this matters a great deal. Little tiny house, $35,000, $25,000, $30,000. It's really crazy.
Yeah, I was in Mount Vernon. I'm working for the library there, you know, and they pay $14,000 for property taxes for a school district that's in trouble.
Who pays $14,000?
In Mount Vernon. People in Mount Vernon in New York, down in Westchester.
Yeah, no, I know where it is. Yeah. Do what?
They pay $14,000 in property taxes to support their schools. That's what I've been told, and people are just
frantic. You pay in property taxes, the thing that's confusing me about this is you pay according to how valuable your real estate is.
Right.
So some people will pay more and some people
Oh, sure. Yeah. But it seems like on the average, that's what it is.
Okay, gotcha.
Yes.
Now I understand.
Yeah, sure. On the average. And, you know, it's like...
it's burdensome, in other words.
Oh, yeah. You know, when my parents bought our house on Long Island,
yeah.
They bought it for $18,000
yeah.
In 1957. And my mother sold it in 92 for $250,000. And now those houses go for half to $750,000, and the tax rate is through the roof. And I'm not sure what we're getting for it, because I have friends who still live in the district and send their kids to school there, and they're complaining.
Before we go to a break, I do want to get to a few letters. We have many, and I want to get to a few of them before we go to a break, and then we move on to other topics. Joseph writes, "It is offensive to hear an argument that the president should accommodate racism and has failed to compromise with the Republicans. There is no compromise with racists. This unvarnished equivocation of the monolithic opposition of Republicans who recently threatened our creditworthiness and held our government hostage to repeal the ACA is evidence of intransigence and anti-democratic destructiveness of the opponents of the president and the normal legislative process." We also got this and said the Republicans, Peter says, "I think that the Republicans use race as a way to block Obama, but I don't think that's the center of it. They want to destroy him or any other Democratic president because that's all they have. Look at Bill Clinton. They were talking impeachment before they even heard of Monica Lewinsky. It's hard to have a positive agenda when you stand for dismantling the federal government." Then Jason writes, "Can someone please ask Rosemary?" That would be me.
That would be I.
when Democrats get together and decided to instruct everything George W. Bush did, I can tell you when Republicans did that for Obama was on his inauguration day in January 20th. 2009, no amount of inviting them over for dinner or having the kids over for play dates was going to change their instruct every single thing that Barack Obama's name attached to it. Remember that he passed the Republicans' health care bill and couldn't get one Republican vote for their own bill.
Oh, you're right. Republicans are all evil and Democrats are perfect.
Well, no, I don't think that's what he's saying. I think that's fair. But
you cannot put all of it on the
Republicans. It was Romney care. It was in my state.
I know all this. I know all this and I agree. But Obama made a pact when he began running for president that he was going to do things differently, and he hasn't. And I'm sorry that he has an extra burden, but he has not delivered, and that is disappointing.
I want to read this comment, and it's not to pick on you specifically, but just about the
I can take it.
No. But just about the idea of where this comes from. Jonathan writes, "Please tell Rosemary to lay off trashing our president. Every day she goes on and on about how failed President Obama is. I think I speak from great many people who are all aware that a mistake with the rollout of health care happened. Now it's fixed. Can we move on from her continual trashing of this excellent president?" When does it go from criticism to trashing?
See,
I'm interested in, because to me this is part of the entire problem that we have in our politics, that it has to be one side or the other.
Well, first of all, let me just say that I love having Rosemary on the show.
Okay, good. So my continued appearances are not in danger.
On the contrary, it's great that you're here. And it's great that Libby is here, and it's great that we have a robust discussion of all of these issues. Would I have wanted not to say anything bad about George Bush when he was leading us into Iraq? No. I mean, you know, there is a place for commentary and discussion. It has never gotten virulent here. We have heard it when it gets that way, and it certainly isn't here.
But I also think that those of us who voted for Obama had this expectation that he was going to be able to come in and be sort of the big white savior and change how business was done in Washington.
An idea that came from him.
Right. And it's a great soundbite, but the reality of that is that you're dealing with entrenchment. and how and a culture that has been the way it's been for a very long sure. time in terms of not being bipartisan anymore. You know, after Newt Gingrich and Contract on America, that was the end of bipartisanship. And so I think it's easy for those of us who wanted things to change to be disappointed in the president because he hasn't been able to affect that change.
Because everybody projected their That's own right. needs
they
into
all
the Obama presidency.
Right, what they thought was going to happen. And we have to be realistic about what you can and cannot accomplish in a short 8 years given the reality of the situation and what he walked into.
But just think, just the other day we had the nuclear option passed. That's going to be profound.
That's going to be great.
That's going to profoundly affect, I think, the way that government works, mm-hmm. even though they're coming up with other tricks to stop nominees. But that would be a huge step forward, I think, mm-hmm. until something else happens.
I just think that we, you know, those of us who were so sick of however many years of George Bush and all the war and all that sort of stuff, we put all of our expectations and our desires and our wishes on this one person.
That's part of my disappointment, is that his failure... his disappointments, if you will, despite whatever obstacles he had that I certainly am not unaware of. But that disappointment is going to disappoint all the people who believed in him, young people who came out in support of him, people who had not previously been involved in politics who got involved. And for what? You know, it was no different.
I'm not sure you speak for Libby. I don't agree with you. I think great things have been accomplished.
So do
I think that they will. I think an agenda has been put forward for America. I think people who never voted and who never participated are voting and participating now. It's all.
I hope you're right, but I don't see it even in the election.
And I think 47 million people who never had health care in this country are going to have health care. That's all something.
For my community, more has been done in the last 8 years than has been done in the last 208 years.
Well, of course,
that's
true, but that was also not led at the federal government, Libby. That was all done at the state level.
I know, but what he has done in terms of coming out for marriage equality means no Democrat can be against marriage equality again as we move forward. After some of the states passed, and now we're up to 16, okay, you know, the blanket policy statements of anyone's marriage, no matter where you get married, being recognized by the federal government is incredibly important for my community. And he did that. He didn't have to do that, but they did that. And it's changing the lives of millions of lesbian and gay Americans. And
well, I'm happy for that. I think that's great. But I'm not saying this to annoy you either, but that is your community. It's a small community compared to the entire United States. We're talking 10 to 15% of the population. I would like to have had a bigger victory for you to sit there and be talking about.
Well,
and what about the 47 million who got put on the health rolls?
Well, they're not there yet, but they will.
I'm perfectly able to back away from a position, but at this point, I don't see it.
Meanwhile, before we go to a break, Joel says, I'd like to give Rosemary a virtual pat on the back. You have a non-biased view of the administration, and I thank you.
You know, it's not non-biased. I am a Democrat. I guess I'm not a journalist specifically, so I can say that. I'm a registered Democrat, and I did vote for Obama, but I come from a family of diehard Republicans. And the one thing I learned is that you have to see the other side. You have to look at both sides. That's what politics is about. That's what's not happening in Washington right now.
I just want to say, I understand we might only be 10 to 15% of the population, but you cannot underestimate or undercut or under whatever the impact that this is having not only on lesbian and gay adults mm-hmm. who are married, but our families and our children.
I do.
And it's a big chunk of the population.
Okay, so let's go beyond this. What about the Hispanic movement in America? What about the idea that 75% of Hispanics voted for Obama, and I think will vote for him again because he's pushing
immigration,
the immigration reform.
But
hasn't gotten immigration.
So
reform.
What? Point is, Franklin Roosevelt was in office for many years before he began to get what he wanted.
Right.
You have to set the table, you have to set the agenda, and then you do it.
Don't see it happening.
We have to take a break, and we'll be back. And then we can finish up all this.
Right.
Apparently, they're...
You know, if the Republicans want to win any seats in Congress, they've got to do something about immigration.
I think we have a good 5 minutes left of sniping. So let's take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll get that out of the way. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Good morning, and welcome back to our roundtable panel. We only have a few minutes left, and...
Thank God. Now we don't have to talk about holiday shopping.
That's we certainly didn't. Yeah, we didn't get to.
I need to go shopping, so let's hurry.
All right. So that means, do you want to talk about, let's talk about the fast food strike, yes?
Yeah. So sad.
Yeah. Seeking to increase pressure on McDonald's, Wendy's, and other fast food restaurants, organizers of a movement demanding a $15 an hour wage for fast food workers say they will sponsor one-day strikes in 100 cities on Thursday and protest activities in 100 additional cities. This movement has been going on for a long time and seems to be gaining traction as the movement struggles to find pressure points in its quest for substantially higher wages for workers. Organizers said strikes were planned for the first time in cities like Charleston, Providence, and Pittsburgh. The protests have expanded greatly since November 2012 when 200 fast food workers engaged in a one-day strike at more than 20 restaurants in New York City. Why is this so important?
Do you remember how we got unions? We got unions because things were bad. And, you know, people organized and they made demands. And then unions got into general disfavor with among a lot of people, not everybody, obviously, but among some people. And now we see that after a while, after you don't have them or after they're not doing what they could be doing, they become very important again. And I think that organizing is a central tenet of American politics and democracy.
Yeah, this story is so sad to me because it used to be McDonald's and those kind of jobs were for kids. They were for teenagers earning basically pocket money. And now the studies show that most of the employees are like 29 years old. Without health insurance, right, because the hours are set exactly so they're not required to pay it. They have to live with their parents to make ends meet. You cannot build a life on these wages. And the real cure, you understand, is that just like Libby said earlier, we have to pay more taxes. If we want better roads and bridges, we have to pay more for what we eat and for what we shop for. Places like I don't want to bash them. I know they do many things right, but Walmart has problems with its employees too. And they
you're doing a lot of advertising, by the way.
Yes, I know.
They certainly are.
But we're to blame for that. We only want to pay as little as we can. It's certainly reasonable, but the price of that is borne by other people.
I'm not so sure you're absolutely right. And Joe, I got to get back to Joe, but
well, you have 10 seconds.
Okay.
I don't think you're right about that because the executives seem to make a lot of money.
Well, that's the way it's all set up to be.
Sure. We'll leave it there. But we thank everyone for their comments. We would love for you to write in roundtablewamc.org, roundtablewamc.org. Rosemary, Libby, and Alan, thank you all. I will see you very soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
We'll continue our conversation and the roundtable after this break.